Today we're honoring the disappearance day of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. I remember very early, as a devotee, it was very wonderful to receive recordings of Srila Prabhupada's lectures, and one of those lectures was the disappearance day of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur when he was in Seattle, very early in our movement. And Prabhupada made elaborately described the spiritual significance of disappearance and the spiritual significance of the appearance day of our acharyas are equal. And then he explained, because he's now speaking of his spiritual master, that the disappearance day of one's spiritual master in one sense represents the parting of one's physical association with that personality. And so it's a time of bereavement or grief. And on the other hand, it signifies, as we say, Nitya Lila Pravishta, Om Vishnupad Paramahamsa. It signifies Nitya Lila Pravishta. Pravishta means entering into. Nitya Lila Pravishta, having the departing of one spiritual master, Bhaktisiddhanta, means he has entered into the eternal pastimes of Krishna. So that's a great celebration. When you know that someone is so qualified that they're leaving this plane means they're entering into Krishna's pastimes, that's a great celebration. So while a great personality has departed and their association is no longer physically available, they're eternally serving the personality of Godhead in his eternal realm in the spiritual world, or wherever he so desires them to go. And in fact, that is the position of Bhaktisiddhanta. The biography of his life is called the Ray of Vishnu. Ray of Vishnu meaning a direct associate of the personality of Godhead who was sent by the personality of Godhead to this plane to assist bringing souls again to the personality of Godhead. Bhakti Siddhanta was the son, well, was one of 10 sons of Bhakti Vinod Thakur, who, you can't speak of Bhakti Siddhanta without speaking of Bhakti Vinod Thakur, not only because they're son and father, but their relationship goes way beyond son and father. Their relationship has to do with the reviving of the teachings of Lord Chaitanya. From the time that Lord Chaitanya appeared, through the passing of many generations, several centuries had passed, where from the beginning, that the immediate several generations following Lord Chaitanya, the glory of the followers and their spiritual attainment and their spiritual achievements and their giving of Krishna consciousness and setting examples and so on was awesome. Generations passed, however, where it wasn't the same. And in fact, it was the opposite. That is, deviations in the teachings of Lord Chaitanya had caused major defamation of Lord Chaitanya's name. If you ever wonder why some older devotees become very concerned about a philosophical deviation, here's why. It's philosophical deviation is one of the worst things that can possibly happen. Because that's what happened with Lord Chaitanya's teachings and similarly with others in the course of history, but specific to our sampradaya. Different groups formed around different deviations. And so it looked like, but it was far from, Lord Chaitanya and Lord Chaitanya's teachings. So the name of Lord Chaitanya was a bad name amongst pious people, intellectual people, because the teachings had become deviated and bad things were happening in the name of the teachings. So that's the circumstance in which Bhaktivinoda Thakur appeared and grew up and made major reversal in that trend by his own personal example and teachings and prolific writings and his influencing of others who were like himself, very, very capable intellectuals and thinkers and had followers, and he moved their appreciation from disregard to respect to Lord Chaitanya's teachings. At the same time, the challenge was very significant to accomplish all that, and so with all of his spiritual power and strength, he prayed to Krishna, reading from one of his biographies, praying to Lord Chaitanya, "Your teachings have been greatly deprecated, and it is not in my power to restore them." He himself had not come in touch with Lord Chaitanya's teachings until he was in his mid-30s, and because that was not the flow of persons of his caliber and position and intellect were going fast in the direction of Europe and European scholarship and British and deprecating anything Indian and certainly Lord Chaitanya's teaching. So it was swimming upstream. It was very, very challenging. So he prayed to Krishna. Pray to Lord Vishnu, please send a ray of yourself. Send someone from the spiritual world to come and change all of this. Assist me, because it's the task is undaunting. So in February of 1874, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur was born, the son of Bhakti Vinod, and his wife was named Bhagavati Devi. And when he was born, besides, you know, fantastic astrological chart, he had his umbilical cord was draped on his body like a Brahmin's thread over his left shoulder, down his right side, indicating he's not an ordinary child. And when he was 6 months old, his father performed anaprashna, the first grains, and the grains were the grains of the prasad of Bimala Devi. He named his son Bimala Prasad, Bimala Devi. One of the names of the consort of Lord Shiva. And his home, Bhaktivinoda Thakur's home, was right adjacent to Grand Road, or on Grand Road, which is the road where from Jagannath Puri Temple to the Gundicha Temple, the Rath Yatra cart would pass every year for the Rath Yatra, stay for some days and then return back to the Jagannath temple. So the cart mysteriously, magically stopped right in front of his house. And the biography says the cart wouldn't move for 3 days. I mean, not for a little while, but 3 days. And those that are familiar with Jagannath Rath Yatra tell me that's not common. I mean, it's not uncommon that, you know, and they just accept Lord Jagannath wants to stop somewhere. Sometimes they get elephants and try to pull the cart. The elephants are making elephant sounds. I don't know how to make an elephant sound. Trumpeting with their... and straining, and the cart won't move. Until Jagannath wants to move. So for 3 days. So the cart was there. So his wife, because he was a deputy magistrate, which was the highest post that anybody was Indian born could have in the Indian government. That was his Bhaktivinoda Thakur's title. But he was also had a special charge. He was in charge of the temple, the whole Jagannath temple. And so he regularized the number of offerings and so many things. So he was up there. He had privileges. So his wife had this newborn child, and she brought the child before, right on the cart. Just up she went on the cart and in front of Lord Jagannath, and the garland of Lord Jagannath mystically just slipped and circled around the small child. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur and the priest and everybody else took it. This is a sign. This is a very special child. And so he was. He was to become a successor acharya in our line of disciplic succession and the ray of Vishnu that Bhaktivinoda Thakur had prayed for. Some of the childhood activities that are described, his father was very strict observer of Vaishnava principles, and one day when the child was just 4 years old, think of some children that you know that are 4 years old, Bimala Prasad, this young son, saw some mango, and before the mango was offered to the deity, he took some mango. So his father mildly, the word that's used is rebuked him. He said, this isn't very good. You've taken the mango before it was offered to the deity. A four-year-old boy said, I'm an offender. For the rest of my life, I will not take mango. Now think of something that a four-year-old says, I'm going to clown Mount Everest or something like that. You know, I'm going to brush my teeth after every meal or something they might say. For the rest of his life, he didn't eat mango, considering himself an offender to the Lord. Just a small boy. When he was 7 years old, he had memorized the entire Bhagavad Gita. And not only he had memorized, because there are many children that know slokas, I've practiced this, experimented, can you recite such and such verse, and they can recite the verse, and then ask them for the translation. They don't know the translation. What to speak of, explain what it means. But at 7 years old, he could give a class for 10 minutes on any verse of the 700 verses of Bhagavad Gita. He was, as a small boy, showing he was up there. He had the didactic memory. Whatever it is that he read once, he remembered perfectly for the rest of his life. He wasn't an ordinary person, even in the material sense. When he was 10 months old, still just a small child, Bhaktivinoda Thakur arranged for his wife and the small child to go from Puri to Calcutta. And those of you that are from India, you know that's not around the corner, that's quite a distance. His wife was carried in a palanquin all the way from Puri to Calcutta with the child on her lap. And so he lived for some time in Calcutta as a young child. When he was just 7 years old, his father wanted to make a house, Bhakti Bhavan. So when he was excavating the foundation for the house, he found a Kurma deity in the ground. So he gave the Kurma deity to his son to worship and initiated him in a Kurma mantra, coincidentally. Kurma, the worshippers of Kurma appreciate that, just like Lord Nrisingadev gives protection to his devotees. So Kurma helps one establish a strong foundation in one's life, and particularly one's spiritual life and one's worship of the personality of God. And so by providential arrangement, he began worshiping Kurmadev at 7 years old. When he was 8 years old, he was enrolled in school in Calcutta, and he created a new system of writing, 8-year-old boy, called Bicanto. B-I-C-A-N-T-O, Bicanto. A system of writing. After some time, he finished his high school studies. While he was in high school, he formed a, forget the name, a name of a society of young men that would remain Naishtika Brahmachari. There weren't too many young men that wanted to do like that. But there were a few because he was a very powerful, influential young person. And he alone amongst that group maintained lifelong celibacy. He never married. He never had any association with women. He was very clear in his mission and purpose in life from a young age. When he entered into college, he took his exam for Sanskrit studies. He studied in college for only a little while. He was 18 when he entered his college studies. It lasted about a year plus, and then while he was there, he practically read the entire library. And remember that he has a didactic memory, so whatever he read, he remembered perfectly. Later on, there are transcripts of things that he spoke. And he would refer to, you know, in Channing's book, page 275, he said, and then he would quote it. Like, you know, uncanny personality. He then put two and two together, like some young men do, and he understood that if I continue with my studies, then it'll be expected that I will I'll get married. So he decided I won't complete my studies, and he took an opportunity to become a librarian of the king of Tripura. So he was the librarian, he read the whole library. He memorized the whole library. And while he was there, the king gave him a special assignment of making biographies of the lineages of the kings of Tripura and their accomplishments and all the details. So he did like that. Then he began studying under a certain person around the age of 24. He began studying Vedic cosmology. And after about a year of studying Vedic cosmology, he wrote a book on Vedic cosmology called Surya Siddhanta. And it was such an astoundingly brilliant book that he became famous in the whole of India as the most brilliant astrologer at the age of 25. And he was given a title by the organization that reviewed his book. The book was Surya Siddhanta, and so they gave him the title of Siddhanta. Later it became Bhakti Siddhanta, but it was a title. Siddhanta means one who, it's the conclusions of truth. Sure, why not? What's next?
They're going to bring in the offering to be made in a few minutes.
Okay.
It's a matter of setup first.
Okay, we're going to put something around it? Or just put the offerings on it. Everyone looks the other way. Okay. Okay. Fantastic. To be continued. So that he was given the title Siddhanta. His name is Bimala Prasad. His birth name, Bimala Prasad. So we know him as Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati. So he was given the title Siddhanta Saraswati when he was 25 for this book that he wrote. Later on, although he was famous all over all of India for his capacity as an astrologer, he later just gave it up, saying, this is material, although it's a science, it's material, and he just kind of lost interest in it. And developed a much deeper appreciation for the Bhakti scriptures. So then Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, later his title became. In the service of the king found him to be so qualified that the king requested him to help oversee the affairs, like a minister, help oversee the affairs of the palace and so forth. And he was so meticulous and careful, he found in every corner of the palace was some corruption and something unpleasant. And so he requested from the king, I'd like to leave this service. The king understood the person he was dealing with. He gave him the wrong service and let him take his pension, full pension. Just don't do anything, because I appreciate all of who you are and what you've done. Here's your pension. He accepted that for a few years, and then he renounced the pension. Just didn't want to receive money from the king for that. Then with his father, even when he was a small boy, because Bhakti Vinod Thakur was a very prolific writer, he engaged his son in learning the art of book production, starting with editing, proofreading, then editing, and then, you know, the actual production of literature. So when he was small, he knew how to do what he was going to do later in his life, produce books. And then his father also took him on pilgrimages, extensive pilgrimages. Just like his father, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, when he was 19, 20 years old, his grandfather passed away. Just before parting, his grandfather made a request, visit the holy places in all of Orissa. And that's a lot of holy places in all of Orissa. So to carry out the order of his grandfather, he did that, Bhaktivinoda Thakur. But then he wrote a book on, much later, some 5-6 years later, on the holy places of Orissa. And it stood as a monumental work for persons who later in time would come to visit the holy places of Orissa, and that was their reference book, because Bhaktivinoda Thakur was so capable. Similarly, when Bhaktisiddhanta was taken by his father to different places, because his father was who his father was, he had access to the priests, and he would ask them many questions about their worship and the history, and later it became a voluminous book. And just imagine, you know, any of us that have tried to do some academic work, you know, like write a paper for school or something, what to speak of write a book? What to speak of when you know there are going to be very critical people about what you write about because it's the history of their place, and you get a little something wrong and, you know, they're bent out of shape. They're really unhappy with you. He created a book later on, just from these visits with his father, describing all these things, the history of the place, the deities, the history of the deities, the type of worship, their teachings for each of the places, like a whole, like an encyclopedia of places of pilgrimage in India. Scholars who later reviewed the book said that it would, just that task alone would take a person with a staff of 25 people at least 25 years to write. And he did it himself in, you know, in his spare time. Like this discussion yesterday evening about time. Depends on your consciousness, how time acts, and how time works for you or against you. In any case, Bhaktisiddhanta was such a personality. So through his father, primarily, because there was not so much access to unadulterated, pure teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he received them from his father. And then he developed the desire, through that association with his father, to become, take shelter of initiation. So, at his understanding, Gopinath. The little prince has to take a walk. There he goes. Okay, so Krishna, Krishna. Where were we?
Initiation.
Huh? Initiation, thank you. He was 26 years old, and here's a cultural point. His father, when he was 7, his father gave him a mantra to worship Kurmadev, but it wasn't the same as initiation in the disciplic succession. So because Bhakti Vinod Thakur was his father, culturally, the father does not give that initiation to his son. So his father guided him to take initiation from Gorkishordas Babaji Maharaj. When he approached Gorkishordas Babaji Maharaj, he was, you know, like, he didn't want to accept disciples. He had no intention to accept disciples. So rather than saying, no, I won't accept you as a disciple, he said, I have to get permission from Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. I'll consult Gaurachandra and see what Gaurachandra says. That's a polite way of saying no. But Bhaktisiddhanta came back and requested him again. And the reply he got was, Gaurachandra hasn't given his reply yet. And then he went a third time. And the third time, Gorkishordas Babaji Maharaj didn't even say anything. There are different versions of this exchange. Bhaktisiddhanta, then Bimala Prasad or Siddhanta Saraswati said that Ramanujacharya, he made request of for initiation 26 times before he was given initiation. So I'll continue to ask again and again. And if there is no opportunity to take shelter of a qualified spiritual master, then what is the use of life? better that I just give up my life. And at that, the description is they were at a particular place where there was a little narrow bridge, and you know, one person, not one car, but a one person bridge, only one person at a time. And he was looking over the edge, like, you know, with sincerity, not suicidal tendency, but saying, what is the use of life? Better I just give up my life. And seeing the sincerity and intent, what to speak of the qualification, Gorkhishore was saying, you're so scholarly and I'm uneducated, I'm practically illiterate, and you need someone that's very educated like you. And Bhaktisiddhanta's reply was, I need somebody who's pure like you, not somebody who's educated. Somebody who's pure, and because of your purity, you can present the teachings transparently and properly. I need your shelter. Without such shelter, what's the use of life? So, Gorkhishore relented, not exactly consented. He accepted that. And it was Bhaktisiddhanta was the only one disciple that Gorkhishore accepted. And again, descriptions of Bhaktivinoda Thakur's travels to holy places. Bhaktisiddhanta went with him. There's a number of very famous events. One time he was invited to speak at a king's place. A special request. So he went, and recognizing the audience wasn't so capable, he spoke very briefly. Briefly means instead of, you know, 2-3 hours, which was common, it was brief, it was something much shorter. But for 4 days, the whole time that he was there, he fasted. And the reason he fasted was there were Sahajiyas and Mayavadis and other people present. He just didn't want to have anything to do with anything that was prepared there. So he fasted for 4 days, and then he went back to Mayapur. He accepted his meal. And then the king found out, and the king went all the way from his palace to personally go and apologize to Bhaktisiddhanta for that. Then on another occasion, some wealthy personality that had a large circle of people, so it was seen as an opportunity by Bhaktisiddhanta to give Lord Chaitanya's teachings, to come and grace his place and speak. So he came. But when he arrived there, this personality had a court pundit, and the court pundit was very envious. The court pundit arranged it in such a way that Bhaktisiddhanta wasn't given an opportunity to speak. Someone else was speaking, or he was speaking, or something. And so, again, Bhaktisiddhanta fasted for 4 days. And the person went and pleaded with him. Bhaktisiddhanta was on his way to the train station walking. He said, "You know, you've come, I've invited you, and I just came to find out that you haven't accepted any meals. I'm an offender. Please accept your meal here before you go." And he said, "Without service, how can I accept meal? So that's okay, I'll take prasada when I get to Mayapur." There's besides a person of principle, an incredible capacity for austerity, what to speak of his austerity of chanting 1 billion names. When we just to like expand it a little bit, how long does it take you to chant 16 rounds? Just over 2 hours. So to chant 64 rounds, that's 4 times that, right? That's 8 hours plus. 3 times 64, that's 24 hours plus. That's how many rounds every day that Haridas Thakur would chant. 3 times 64. 3 lakhs of names. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur similarly chanted 3 lakhs of names, 3 times 64 rounds every day for 6-7 years. Every day. I mean, I just came from a japa retreat, and we were in Austin, Texas, and many of the people chanted 64 rounds, and they were very happy. And the Shamasundar, who's the temple president in Houston temple, he had chanted 93 rounds. He got up at 1:30 in the morning, and he was chanting, you know, very strongly throughout the whole day. He said he took a little nap also, chanting very strongly. He chanted 93 rounds. So later I asked him, what's the most rounds you've ever chanted? Did I say this last night? Okay. So, huh?
It's worth saying again.
Okay. 128 rounds on Prabhupada's disappearance day in Vrindavan during the Brajmandal Parikrama. But how do you do that? How do you chant 64 times 64 plus 64 plus 64? Even once in one day. It's like, you know, from midnight, like, you know, okay, it's midnight and I'll start chanting until midnight, and to chant 3 times 64 rounds, and then to do that the next day and 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 the next day. I mean, what's that like? What does it take to do that? What does such a person experience and feel? Bhaktisiddhanta demonstrated that he was on the platform of a liberated soul. Paramahamsa, topmost stage of perfected consciousness. And not just, you know, one day. For years. And even just like to add to that, so, but later he accepted sannyas, which meant that he placed himself within the varnashram system, like, you know, the question, it was about our prescribed duties. So the duties of a sannyasi are with restriction, whereas a paramahamsa has no restriction. They're perfected beings. But he accepted this lesser position for the sake of preaching, for the sake of delivering the message of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Because after some time, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, his father, left, and Gaurakishore Das Babaji left. Before leaving, they both gave him instructions, same instruction: take this teaching and spread it throughout the land. So with that instruction, he took the step to do that. He took sannyas. In a very unique way, he sat in front of a picture of Gaurakishore Das Babaji and received the sannyas mantra from a picture. That's not ordinary. One shouldn't imitate such activity, although I know someone that did it. So one shouldn't do that. It's not an ordinary person's activity. But Bhaktisiddhanta had that qualification. So in the midst of that, 3 times 64 rounds every day. During that period of time, there was a situation that arose where there were groups of people in India who were born Brahmanas, and they were very strong on the point that in order to worship the deity and do Brahminical activity like perform yajnas, you have to be born Brahmana. Otherwise, it's a no-no. It's a violation of Vedic codes. And there are some teachings that support that. Brahmanism. And then, on the other side, there's Pancharatriki Vidhis. Regulations that say, if one is duly initiated by Pancharatriki principles, one then becomes spiritually qualified to worship the deity and perform Vedic yajnas. So there was this clash. You know what religious clashes can be like. They can be violent sometimes. And then there were these intellectuals in both groups that said this and said that and said this and said that. And it got to be really wild. So they approached Bhaktivinoda Thakur. You're a Brahmana. You know this side. You know you're Vaishnav. You know that side, and you're super learned. So can you help us resolve this? Because we don't want to kill each other off. Because that can happen. It gets violent sometimes. Some parts of the world. So at the time, Bhaktivinoda Thakur was very ill. Very, very ill. Too ill to go. And so he was lamenting to his son that, isn't there somebody in this whole world? The whole elevated saintly sangha of personalities in all of India that can't resolve this situation? And hearing his father speak that way, Bhaktisiddhanta said, if you give me the instruction, I'll go. So his father said, very well, you go. So he wrote an essay, which is now available as a book, Brahmanism and Vaishnavism. This is in the midst of his chanting 3 times 64 rounds a day. He wrote a book. And then he went and spoke before an assembly, morning till night. I don't know when he chanted his japa, but he chanted his japa. He went and delivered this message. It was a 2-day message. The first day's message was, yay, Brahmanism, and quoted verses and gave so many explanations. And that group said at the end of the day that was like, he knows his stuff. He's good. They didn't know what was going to come the next day. The next day was, the perfection of a Brahmana is to know Para Brahman or Bhagavan, Krishna, and that's a Vaishnava. The topmost of Brahmanas is a Vaishnava, Brahmana Vaishnava. And those who are duly initiated into the procedures of Vaishnava practice, they're qualified Vaishnavas, which makes them the topmost amongst the Brahmanas. And so at the end of the day, he had a standing ovation from both sides for 10 minutes. Because his power was powerful. His brilliance was effulgent. Everyone accepted what his conclusion. Can you imagine that when there's a religious controversy and someone comes in and in 2 days they're giving him a standing ovation? We accept everything that you said. It doesn't happen. It happened. That's the power of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. So later, as a sannyasi, for a number of years, he traveled throughout of India and established temples. And 64 temples under the name of the Gaudiya Math. Math means temple. And just a couple of anecdotal things, but like particular incidences from his life. One time he was in Dhaka, and he explained that within the words of Srimad Bhagavatam, there's volumes and volumes and volumes of meaning. So to demonstrate it, he spoke on that. I've heard different versions, but one of them is for 30 days. Another version is for 60 days. He spoke on one verse of Srimad Bhagavatam and didn't repeat himself at all. Because there's volumes and volumes and volumes and volumes of meaning within. It was the first verse of Srimad Bhagavatam. Janma yasya yaton vayaditara tashchartesu bhigyasvarat, etc. Teine brahma hridaya adhikavaye. He just spoke on it and spoke on it and spoke on it. It would be wonderful to have recordings of that, huh? They didn't have the technology. Or like a video of Bhaktisiddhanta explaining. We're very fortunate that we have that technology. We can see and hear our Srila Prabhupada speaking, delivering messages, instructing in the science of Krishna consciousness. Under his father's instruction, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur did 2 different, particularly in Navadvip. Following Navadvip Parikrama, following the path that Lord Nityananda took Jiva Goswami to visit all the places of Lord Chaitanya's pastimes, Bhaktisiddhanta went with his disciples. And they followed the same path. They went to the same places in the same sequence. And for 7 days that took place. And in each of the places where there wasn't a temple, he established a shrine, a marker, like, you know, like a column about waist high or a little taller, with a little marking at the top indicating what it was. Like, I remember the first time I went to Mayapur in 1974, Achyutananda Swami, took us on a kirtan through the fields of Mayapur. We didn't know where we were, but he did, fortunately. And it felt like being with Lord Chaitanya in his, just the holy Dham. And suddenly, he stopped and he said, "See this shrine over here? This is the place of Kolaveshwar Sridhar." Now, those of you that know the geography a little bit, that's far, like far from Mayapur Temple to the place of Kolaveshwar Sridhar. We just were, like the discussion last night about time, we just lost track of time. We were with Lord Chaitanya in Mayapur and that's all that mattered. So little shrines in Mayapur. Or he did the same thing in his travels in South India. He took a group of devotees in travels, 1936, in travels in South India. And he established the Padapith, the lotus imprint of Lord Chaitanya, and established them in various places where Lord Chaitanya visited. And those are still there. Like just outside the main entrance of Sri Rangam, you'll see the... Now it's when I went there in the 70s, it was just out in the open. Now there's a little enclosure, like a little shrine around that little column, and on the top of the column is Lord Chaitanya's lotus feet, to indicate that Lord Chaitanya graced this place by his association. I'm going to read a little bit. This is Bhaktisiddhanta's description of the passing of one of his elder brothers. Ananda Prasad Datta, the elder brother of Saraswati Goswami, suffered with severe headache shortly before his death. On the day of Ananda's death, Saraswati Goswami remained by his side all through the night chanting Harinam. Before Ananda passed away, he briefly regained consciousness and began apologizing to Saraswati Goswami, who simply encouraged him to remember the holy name of the Lord. Suddenly, the tilak mark of the Ramanuja Sampradaya became clearly visible on Ananda's forehead. Ananda explained that in his past birth, he had been a Vaishnava belonging to the Ramanuja sect, but due to committing an offense at the feet of a Gaudiya Vaishnava, Ananda had to be reborn. However, as a result of his past merit, he was fortunate enough to be born in Bhaktivinoda's family. After finishing his account, Ananda breathed his last. Another mystical event. One day, just before Janmashtami, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati was engaged in bhajan in Mayapur, but was feeling disturbed as he was unable to arrange for milk to be offered to the deity. It was the rainy season and it was flooded, so he wasn't able to make an arrangement. So in his mind he began to think, wishing to have milk for the deity, "Have I thought like this for my own sake? That is wrong." Because it was the monsoon season, Lord Chaitanya's birth site was covered with water. It was totally inaccessible except by boat. However, that same afternoon, one milkman turned up there, wading through the water and slush, carrying a large quantity of milk, kheer, butter, cottage cheese, etc. apparently a zamindar named Hiranya something, Hari Narayan Chakravarti, okay, guided by Lord Chaitanya, had sent the milkman with all the items. So everyone was very happy, and they're making these grand offerings in the middle of the flooded monsoon season to the deities. Bhakti Siddhanta, seeing all this happening, became very surprised. And he asked what happened. And then when he was told, then Bhakti Siddhanta said, "To the deity, I'm very sorry to have caused you so much trouble. Why did I have such uncalled for thought? To fill my desire, you have inspired another person to arrange to send these things." And everyone was... Then they understood why this person came, because they just saw the person come. They didn't know what the thoughts were. A few other mystical things about Bhakti Siddhanta. When he was making arrangements, he personally went to Jaipur to make arrangements for deities in his temples. So in his own place, that's his headquarters at Chaitanya Math, he went to Jaipur and was searching and searching and searching. And he didn't find a deity that satisfied him, inspired him. So he stayed there for a number of days, and one day as he was passing by a shop owner came out and said, "This deity is for you, please take it." And he said, "Well, what do you mean?" He said, "Because in a dream last night, the deity, this very deity that I carved, said, there is one sadhu, and he'll come passing by in the morning, first thing, and I want to be worshipped by him. So you please take, and there's no price, this is a gift. He wants to be worshipped by you." In other words, it wasn't a marketing scheme, it was something that really happened. So that deity, Gandharvika Giridhari, is the deity that you find in the Chaitanya Gaudiya Math. Whenever I've been to Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur's Samadhi at that same Chaitanya Math, and Jananivas is with us, he always tells the same story, which I'll tell as best I can. Jananivas is the pujari, the head pujari in Mayapur for years and years and years and, you know, umpteen years. So he naturally made friends with other pujaris in other places. So one person he made friendship with was when he was a very small boy. He was living in the temple, the Chaitanya Math temple, and Bhakti Siddhanta was very regulated, so he would take rest early, rise early. So one evening he saw Bhakti Siddhanta walking and heading for the gate, going towards the ghat, towards, you know, the long end of the Bhakti Siddhanta road. So being curious, he followed him, and, you know, like, where's Guru Maharaj going? And he followed him, and he saw this down the road a distance, some effulgent personalities having kirtan, and Bhakti Siddhanta was engaging in kirtan with them and came back. And the young boy asked, you know, "What was that?" He said, "Oh, the demigods, they came to have kirtan for Lord Chaitanya and the associates of Lord Chaitanya. I wanted to receive them." Like, mystical. There's one story that Dinabandhu told. I didn't read it, but maybe those of you have read that large volume of Bhakti Siddhanta's writings, his biography. Dinabandhu in Mayapur told this story, that there was one of the temples that Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur had established. He wanted very much that there would be brahmacharis in the temple, because he wanted the preaching to go on, and preaching would be more effective, most effective, if there were persons that could do that full time, and so he wanted brahmacharis. So one of the places that they had rented was a used house. It was an old house. In fact, it was a haunted house. And the brahmacharis were spooked by the ghosts that were haunting the house. So Bhakti Siddhanta went and visited there, and they said, "Oh, Guru Maharaj, the place is spooked." So he said, "Just chant Hare Krishna. What's wrong with you?" So the way that Dinabandhu is the best of storytellers. He was describing they had taken rest at night, and through a window, a hand started to move through the window, and the young brahmachari saw the hand and screamed, "Ah!" And the hand withdrew. And Bhaktisiddhanta said, "What was that?" And he said, "It was, didn't you see? It was a ghost." And so he said, just chant Hare Krishna, just take rest, everything will be all right." So that the hand started coming through the window again. And this time Bhaktisiddhanta hadn't laid down. He was sitting right by the window. And as the hand was coming through the window, he turned and said, "Hare Krishna," and the hand disappeared and never came back again. This was what a young devotee, who later became an old man, that related all of this incident to Bhakti Vikash Maharaj. Another example of his clairvoyance or his spiritual acumen was in preparation for the Navadvip parikrama that they were planning. Bhaktisiddhanta was going by foot through the parikrama path that they would follow, and as he was passing one particular area, he pointed to a little hillock, meaning like a little, instead of the flat agricultural field, some little rise over there. And as he was passing, he just gestured to those that were with him, his assistants, and said, Please inquire and find out who owns that land. I'd like to purchase that land." So they went back to their temple, and some days later they came to Bhaktisiddhanta and said, "We found out who owns the land." And the man said, Tell your spiritual master, he's a great sadhu. I'd like to give him some land. I don't want to sell him some land. I'd like to give him some land. I'd like to give him some worthwhile land. That's worthless land. Nothing grows there. No rice will grow, no eggplants will grow, nothing will grow. It's worthless land." Then he said, "Go back and tell him I want that piece of land, and I'll pay a fair price." So the landowner understood he was serious about that particular piece of land, and so he sold it to him. And then Bhaktisiddhanta later disclosed that land is the place where King Suvarnasen in Satyuga had a palace. And the hillock is there because land had covered over the palace. And I want you to dig a foundation for a little temple. And one of the things that they found out from the local people was there was this humongous cobra that was at the top of that hillock. And everybody in the village was afraid to go there because a huge cobra, you don't go near a huge cobra. But when they went there for that purpose, the cobra slithered away. He was protecting the place. And as they did the excavation, they found columns from the palace of Suvarnasen. And when you go there today, some of them that haven't been stolen since then, there's still some columns, some ruins from the palace of Suvarnasen. Now, how did Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur know that? He had a different channel than the rest of us, like Gauranga channel or something. Supersoul indicating to him things that we can't see, and powers to do things that we can't do, and capacities to serve in ways that we don't have capacity. Bhaktisiddhanta had a vision. What's our timing? 12 o'clock? Okay. He had a vision that he received from his spiritual master and from his father, both, that the whole world should be Krishna conscious because Mahaprabhu had said it. The chanting of the holy name will be heard in every town and village of the world. So his vision was way beyond the scope of his 64 temples in India. He wanted the world to be Krishna conscious. So it was a big fanfare of each of the little temples to give something, to send some two of the most prominent sannyasis to go to England and establish Krishna consciousness in England. There's a very famous photograph of Bhaktisiddhanta walking with a whole entourage behind him as they were heading to send these men to go to the boat to go to England to establish a temple. They came back empty-handed, but he had the vision. One other little anecdotal thing, when there was a temple in Mamgachi, which was at that time like a jungle. I mean, not like a jungle, it was a jungle. You know, it was said that at the time of Bhaktisiddhanta that you could walk around in that area and not see the sun, because there's so many trees, palm trees and tall trees, just like nature's beauty, abundant. But when it came time to establish the deity, Bhaktisiddhanta arranged for an elephant to carry the deity on top of the elephant, an elephant procession to bring Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to the altar to be established. Anyway, there's so many nice things to say. He was so innovative. One of the photographs I have in my wall in my office in New York is Bhaktisiddhanta sitting in a convertible, because one of the things sannyasis are not supposed to do is ride in conveyances, walk barefoot. He rode in a convertible, not just a car, in Vrindavan town, not just, you know, somewhere off in the countryside, wearing a stitched coat, because sannyasis aren't supposed to do that too. And, you know, waving to everybody as he was going by. Because his teaching was yukta vairagya. Something can be used in Krishna's service. You use it in Krishna's service. That's the standard of renunciation. Not the renunciation that you don't do these, you don't do this and don't do that. That's incomplete renunciation. This is the teachings of Rupa Goswami. He wasn't interested in convertibles or comfort. He had already demonstrated. He was beyond any consideration of the mind and senses for worldly attraction. But his message was very strong, and he like presented it strongly. The platform of pure devotional service is everything should be used in Krishna's service. He spent his final days, 12 o'clock time is upon us, he spent his final days in Puri. There are some wonderful instructions that are found as he gave instructions to his disciples upon parting. There isn't time for it. But he spoke very strongly about humility. He spoke very strongly about purity. He spoke very strongly about taking shelter of the lotus feet of Rupa and Raghunath, and becoming fixed in pure devotional service. His appeal was heartfelt and very, very, very strong. And then he left the world. We're honoring his disappearance day today. So it was January 1, 1937. So by lunar calendar, the same day as today, solar calendar. So this is a very special day for Bhaktisiddhanta's disappearance. And we'll perform Pushpanjali for Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur and then Arati for him. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.